It's nearly noon and time for the KMXT Midday Report. On 100.1 FM, you're listening to KMXT. It's your public radio station. Stories coming up on the Midday Report. Senator Coghill has a request of the Division of Elections. The University of Alaska Fairbanks hockey team is quarantined. We have another of our essays in the ongoing series from students. Testing for COVID in Alaska is dropping off. And a Western Alaska school district gets creative bringing internet to their students. 58 degrees out there, a rather pleasant day today. We're looking for 20% chance of rain before 1, mostly cloudy skies overnight. High near 65 today, they're calling for. Southwest wind to 15 miles per hour, but could be gusting as high as 25. Mostly cloudy skies tonight with a low around 53. Partly cloudy skies tomorrow with a low around 50. We have gale warnings on both sides of the island.
Live from NPR News, I'm Lakshmi Singh. The White House says the man who was fatally shot during clashes in Portland, Oregon over the weekend was Aaron J. Danielson. Danielson was a member of the right-wing group Patriot Prayer. Though police are still investigating whether his death was directly linked to earlier clashes between a caravan of Trump supporters and counter-protesters, White House Press Secretary Kayleigh McEnany suggested it was. She asserted that the suspected killer had said he was 100% Antifa. McEnany also characterized the caravan as good Americans who wanted to protest peacefully. When asked if the president would condemn the actions of Kyle Rittenhouse, the teenager charged with killing two protesters in Kenosha, Wisconsin, days after police paralyzed an unarmed black man, McEnany said the president has declined to weigh in. President Trump plans to visit Kenosha tomorrow. Former Vice President Joe Biden unleashed a blistering attack on Trump today.
He may believe mouthing the words, law and order makes him strong. But his failure to call on his own supporters to stop acting as an armed militia in this country shows how weak he is.
Biden in the battleground state of Pennsylvania. Trump's warned that America would be less safe under Biden. NPR's Mara Lyson says the Democratic nominee flipped the script today.
To say, does anyone believe there will be, quote, less violence in America if Donald Trump is reelected? He said, we need justice, we need safety, and he tried to link the crisis of racial unrest and police violence to COVID, and saying COVID and economic devastation have also happened on Trump's watch.
NPR's Mara Lyson. Three associates of President Trump's former campaign chief have pleaded not guilty to fraud and money laundering charges. We have details from NPR's Ryan Lucas.
Steve Bannon and his three co-defendants, Brian Colfage, Andrew Badalato, and Timothy Shea, are accused of defrauding hundreds of thousands of people who donated to a fundraising campaign to help build a wall along the southern border. At a court hearing held via video teleconference, Colfage, Badalato, and Shea pleaded not guilty to the charges. Bannon had already entered a plea of not guilty earlier this month.
NPR's Ryan Lucas reporting. The criminal case against President Trump's first national security advisor is still active for now. A federal appeals court is rejecting the Justice Department's request to promptly dismiss Michael Flynn's prosecution without a further hearing. Flynn has pleaded guilty to lying to the FBI in connection to the probe into Russia's 2016 election interference and ties to the Trump campaign. The Dow Jones Industrial Average closes down 225 points or 0.75% to end the day at 28,428. The Nasdaq closed up 79 points. S&P was down 7 points. You're listening to NPR News.
NPR News is presentada a usted en parte por la Providence Kodiak Island Centro de Asesoramiento. Para una cita o más información, por favor, llama al 907-481-2400.
North Pole State Senator John Coghill says he will ask the Division of Elections for a recount of the Republican primary race for Senate District B. Coghill has lost the race to Robert Myers by 16 votes. Another primary race for Democrats in House District 1 also may face a recount.
According to Alaska law, if the difference between candidates is 20 votes or less, the state will pay for a recount. On Friday, the Division of Elections finished counting absentee and questioned ballots, and that decided some races with very close numbers. In Senate District B, only 16 votes separate Robert Myers, the apparent victor, from John Coghill. Because that's within the margin of error described in the law, the state will recount the ballots if one of the candidates asks. Coghill says he will.
I'm going to definitely call for a recount. When it's this close, you just need to double-check everything.
Reviewers will be working today on the last of the August 18th primary election. Tiffany Montemayor of the Alaska Division of Elections says the ballots will get one more review today before the election is certified.
They're going to go through our state review board. Our target deadline to have everything certified is August 30th.
As soon as that's done, Coghill's request for a recount should be formally received.
I've already sent an email in saying once the certification comes out, if it remains the number that you gave me on Saturday, I would like this email to be noticed that I would like a recount.
State law says the recount must be held within 5 days of the elections director receiving the request. And in House District 1, Christopher Quist has won the Democratic primary over Benny Colbert by a mere 8 votes. That, too, is within the statutory limit for a state-funded recount, if one of the candidates makes the formal request. Colbert says he's being encouraged by supporters to request a recount, but as of Sunday night, he has not made up his mind. In Fairbanks, I'm Robin.
The University of Alaska Fairbanks hockey team is in quarantine after a player tested positive for COVID-19. Speaking at a weekend press conference, UAF Vice Chancellor of Student Affairs and Athletics Keith Champagne said prior to testing positive, the player had attended an August 22nd party at an off-campus residence.
Several members of the hockey team had a social gathering, and it was attended by a combination of students and student athletes.
Although the event took place off-campus, Champagne says those involved could face discipline.
It was poor judgment, and we do have a student conduct process that is done through our Center for Student Rights and Responsibilities, and they are currently investigating.
According to university data supplied over the weekend, 21 hockey players are in quarantine, and another 6 who have now tested positive for the virus are in isolation. There are also 6 non-hockey athletes in quarantine and another one who tested positive in isolation. An additional 10 students are in quarantine and 8 more in isolation. It's unclear how many of the 15 positive cases are from exposure at the party. There have been a total of 17 confirmed COVID-19 cases at UAF since campus reopened for fall semester on August 17th. This week we continue our series of essays on culture and COVID-19, part of a summer workshop that a group of Kodiak students took part in. They met for 4 weeks in sessions that were held online. Their mission, to document the impact of the coronavirus on their lives with a video. The essays were part of the preparation for these projects. Today we'll hear from Joseph Ocampo, who is in the 10th grade. Before the COVID quarantines, there just wasn't enough time in the day for all the video games he wanted to play, but things quickly changed, and suddenly, like a lot of teens, he found himself with too much of a good thing.
It was another day at school, waiting for the bell to ring at the end of the day. The sun was shining into the room, which made it hot. After waiting out the last few minutes, the bell had finally rang. I walked out of the class and linked up with my friend, and we walked down to our lockers from the 4th to the 1st floor. I didn't use my locker for my things, so I did the next best thing. I put a lot of milk in my locker. We got on the bus and started the trek home. During the ride, I could feel the heat of the sun from the windows getting absorbed in my hair and clothes. I was feeling tired and finally made it home, where I instantly turned on my computer and logged in before getting into bed to take a nap, relieved that school was over for the day. Once I woke up, I started gaming with my friends for the rest of the evening. Sometimes I play with 6 or 8 friends, but this evening it was just 3. We played Tom Clancy's Rainbow Six Siege for hours. Sometimes up to 8 hours. On the weekend, I have more time to play, so I go for 14 hours, with some breaks. My eyes are used to it, so they don't get tired anymore. Usually, I'm dumping on the enemy team in no time. What I didn't know is that soon, I would have more time to play games than usual. Spring break was approaching and the teachers told us we might have to switch to online school with COVID-19 about to hit the US, which I didn't believe at first. When online school started, my friends and I obviously took the opportunity to play games while we were doing school. Sometimes, I miss seeing my friends in person, but other times, I feel like I can connect better when I am gaming. Now that we've started to get together, sometimes with social distancing, I feel extra grateful that I get to visit in person.
That was Joseph Ocampo, one of the interns of the Kodiak Culture and COVID-19 Virtual Documentary Internship Program. The Alaska Community Foundation Social Justice Fund and the Charlotte Martin Foundation provided financial support for this summer workshop. It was led by Kodiak History Museum, Rafael Batanga with Batanga Productions, and Marie Achima with Sea Stories. There will be a virtual screening of these student videos Thursday afternoon, and you can attend via Zoom. 8,566 COVID-19 tests were conducted in Alaska last week, well below peak weekly numbers in July. State Chief Medical Officer Dr. Ann Zink points to Alaska's decreasing willingness to get tested as a serious concern.
People say, I don't want to test because I am worried we'll find cases and then our schools won't open, or I don't want to test because then how will we find housing, or I don't want to test because I'm sure I'm fine and why do I want to know I don't want to quarantine for 14 days? Honestly, that is the thing that keeps me up right now. That is my biggest concern about the state.
Speaking to Interior Rotary Club members on Friday, Dr. Zink said testing is key to identifying and suppressing COVID-19 outbreaks. While most people do not get seriously ill from the virus, Zink emphasized that a lot is unknown, including about long-term effects.
There is some evidence for kind of some cardiac abnormalities and some long-term fatigue and shortness of breath. Just because you don't die or get hospitalized from this disease does not mean that you may not have long-term consequences to it.
Asked about high-risk activities, Zink specifically singled out bars as problematic to virus spread, as people are just less careful about social distancing when consuming alcohol. Western Alaska school districts are trying to be creative in providing online instruction in an area where internet access is limited. As KNOM's Emily Hofstetter reports, there's legal wording in one federal program that's challenging one way Nome public schools can provide broadband internet to their services or to their students.
Every Nome public school student in the third grade and up has access to a school laptop or tablet that they can take home. But once they're at home, many of those devices have nothing to connect to. Affordable high-speed internet is a tool many families in Nome struggle to access. That's just one more challenge for someone like Jim Shreve, the technology director for Nome Schools. His job requires him to be ready to put the entire district online at just a moment's notice.
And so what we're wanting to do is get internet hotspots, push out, either mount a large antenna up on the elementary school to where we can actually basically set up our own, let's just call it our own LTE network, and be able to broadcast our signal to little receivers that would go home with the computers to the students.
But here's the catch. For a school like Nome, that is technically illegal. Nome Public Schools currently has high-speed broadband within school buildings. Almost all of Nome School District's broadband is funded by a federal program for low-income schools, operated through the Federal Communications Commission, or FCC. Superintendent Jamie Burgess explains the law only allows that funding for district internet to be used in the classroom.
So, for example, here in our district office building, we have internet for the Anvil City Science Academy Charter School. But at the other end of our building, we have a temporary teacher housing and guest housing dormitory, and our access points cannot reach into that residential housing.
The program is called E-Rate. It provides funding for broadband in low-income classrooms and libraries across the country. Without it, Burgess estimates Nome schools would pay over $750,000 annually for broadband service. Technology Director Jim Shreve is hoping NPS can get an exception.
What we are trying to do is request a waiver from the FCC through the E-rate program that will allow us to push our internet out to our school-owned devices if we get into a situation where we have to be in a hybrid model or a remote learning model.
It's an attractive model for the school, too. It provides them complete control over what websites can and cannot be accessed on the students' devices. NPS has submitted that waiver, but there is no timeline for when they'll get a response back from the FCC. Meanwhile, Nome isn't the only district struggling with this problem. There have been conversations in Washington, D.C. to modernize the E-rate program so that students can use that school internet from their home during the pandemic. Senator Lisa Murkowski spoke to the program's limits at a virtually held Senate committee hearing in June.
We know that E-rate provides this critical support to our school districts in so many of our rural areas. But when school is closed and the E-rate program is limited to providing internet at the school, kids can't get access after that. They don't have the connectivity that they need.
As for Nome Superintendent Burgess, she hopes that the program can be expanded to allow widespread access for all schools, especially other rural schools that serve predominantly Alaska Native communities.
There's a lot of conversation in our country right now about racism, equity, etc. I think it would be a huge step this year if the FCC just put out a blanket waiver to all districts participating in the E-rate program, at least for this coming school year.
Nome Public Schools plans on starting in-class learning on Monday. But if community spread of COVID-19 causes school buildings to close down, they will again have to find ways to work with students who have no internet access at home. Reporting in Nome, I'm Emily Hofstetter.
After a four-week reset in an attempt to curb a surge of COVID-19 cases, the municipality of Anchorage is loosening restrictions on businesses. Starting Monday, restaurants, bars, breweries, and nightclubs will be allowed to resume indoor sit-down service at 50% capacity. Alaska Public Media's Kavitha George reports that the city is still worried about the high case numbers and recent outbreaks.
Besides restaurants and bars, bingo halls and theaters, which were closed under the last emergency order, are allowed to reopen at half capacity. Gathering limitations have also increased, though masks are required at all gatherings and in public spaces. Mayor Ethan Berkowitz says the reduced case numbers and increased capacity for testing and tracing contributed to the decision to relax restrictions.
We saw declining numbers. We have flattened the curve. We have raised the bar. And so we have increased confidence that we're in a better position today than we were a month ago.
The city says strict restrictions during the reset lowered the number of new cases, but community transmission remains widespread and, quote, threatens to overwhelm our health system. Over the last month, hundreds of residents have protested the restrictions outside Anchorage Assembly Chambers. Some restaurants refused to comply with the restrictions on indoor dining, resulting in a lawsuit and fines. Berkowitz says the public outcry had nothing to do with loosening restrictions.
Of course, we try and incorporate the positive, constructive suggestions that people make into the decisions that we make. But the decisions we make are science-driven. Had we bent to those kind of louder voices, we would never have done anything.
Even with the decline in cases, Anchorage remains at the high alert level for measuring the pandemic, especially with recent outbreaks among vulnerable populations. Officials with the Anchorage Health Department hope to see cases drop further in the coming weeks. Reporting in Anchorage, I'm Kavitha George.
A Galena man drowned over the weekend. Alaska State Troopers say 25-year-old Kevin Evans tried to swim to a drifting boat on the Yukon River slough. Troopers say Evans was pulled underwater and did not resurface, and the Galena Search and Rescue located and recovered his body. Plans are coming together for shortened versions of the Yukon Quest on either side of the U.S.-Canada border. Citing financial troubles and pandemic-caused cross-border travel restrictions, Quest organizers announced in June that both Alaska and Yukon side directors had decided to scrap the 1,000-mile international event and instead focus on shorter races this year. In a Facebook post, Quest Vice President Peter Camper says that the Alaska side has enough money to put on the Quest 300, a 300-mile qualifying race normally held in the background of the 1,000-mile main event. Camper says the Alaskan Board of Directors is renaming the 300-mile race the Summit Quest because of its inclusion of Rosebud and Eagle Summits, the two highest peaks on the Quest Trail. He says information on the Canadian side of the race will be coming out soon.
KMXT Local News is underwritten in part by
GCI. GCI has adjusted store hours across the state to keep our customers and employees as safe as possible during this time. The most up-to-date store hours are available on GCI.com.
And by Ardinger's Fine Furnishings, proud to offer a variety of sofas and love seats made in Oregon by Stanton, as well as massage and zero-gravity chairs by Human Touch. Find the fabric and style that fits your lifestyle in the store or by special order. Also featuring inviting rugs, lamps, and accessories for your home at Ardinger's, 486-5554.
This is Alaska Fish Radio. I'm Lainey Welch. The importance of forest fish to Alaska. More on a first ever study after this.
Did you know that eating wild and sustainable Alaska seafood can boost your immune system? Learn more about Alaska seafood's many proven nutritional benefits at wildalaskaseafood.com.
A first ever 10-year study gives estimates of the numbers and values of what the Tongass and Chugach National Forests contribute to Alaska's commercial salmon industry. The Tongass is the largest national forest in the U.S. at nearly 27,000 square miles and covers most of southeast Alaska. The adjacent Chugach, at half the size, ranks as the nation's second largest forest and covers the Copper River Delta, Prince William Sound, and part of the Kenai Peninsula. Researchers excluded salmon born outside the forests, lakes, rivers, and streams. The results showed that from 2007 to 2016, the two forests contributed 48 million salmon on average each year to commercial fisheries, with a dockside value averaging $88 million. These forest fish represented 25% of Alaska's total salmon catch for the time period and 16% of the total commercial value. For the Tongass, the most lucrative forest fish was pink salmon, averaging $42 million to fishermen each year. For the Chugach, the priciest returns came from sockeye salmon, which produced $10.5 million in local catches on average. The study said it underestimates the value of salmon produced by the forests, as it only takes into account commercial harvests, not recreational or subsistence uses. It also counts only dockside value and not the economic impacts of local fish processing. At a time when forests are under threat of timber harvests, mining, more roads, and development, the researchers hope their findings can be used to better inform forest management. The study was published in the North American Journal of Fisheries Management. Fish Radio is also brought to you by Ocean Beauty Seafoods, serving Alaska's fishing communities since 1910. In Kodiak, I'm Lainey Welch.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Hello, this is the Alaska Department of Fish and Game in Kodiak with Kodiak Commercial Salmon Fishery Advisory Announcement number 36, date issued August 31st at 10 a.m. There will be a 102-hour commercial salmon fishing period from noon Tuesday, September 1st, until 6 p.m. Saturday, September 5th, in the following areas. In the Central, North Cape, Sheratine Bay, Kajuyak Bay, Terror Bay, and Inner Ugaunic Bay sections of the Northwest Kodiak District. The Humpy Dead Man, Cape Alatak, Alatak Bay, Mosier Bay, and Olga Bay sections of the Alatak District, the Eastside Kodiak District, and the Northeast Kodiak District. There will be a 78-hour commercial salmon fishing period from noon Tuesday, September 1st, until 6 p.m. Friday, September 4th, in the following areas. In the Outer Ayakulik section of the Southwest Kodiak District, the Afognak District, except for the Outer Katoy Bay and Iyuit Bay sections, remain open until further notice, and the Mainland District. As previously announced, The following areas remain open until further notice: the Outer Katoy Bay and Iziut Bay sections of the Afognak District, and until further notice, in that portion of the northwest and southwest Kodiak District south of latitude of Cape Kuliak, king salmon 28 inches or greater in length may not be retained by purseine gear in the commercial fishery and must be returned to the water unharmed. Other closed waters are shown in the Kodiak area salmon statistical chart, detailed in commercial salmon fishing regulations, and statistical charts, harvest strategies, and commercial salmon fishing regulations are available at the Kodiak Fish and Game Office. And, of course, the most recent salmon fishery information may be obtained by calling the department's 24-hour recorder phone at 486-4559. Thank you very much. Good luck fishing. This is the Alaska Department of Fish and Game.
It is Monday, August 31st, last day of August, the year 2020. We're looking at 13 hours and 59 minutes of daylight today. Sun will set at 9:08 p.m. That is a loss of 4 minutes and 52 seconds compared to yesterday. High tide's coming up here on the Kodiak's east side at 2:22 this afternoon. It will be a 7.5-foot tide, followed by a low tide at 7:47 this evening of 2.2 feet. You have a minus tide at 8:31 a.m. tomorrow, minus 0.5 feet. Over on the west side, you have a high tide coming up at 2:44 p.m. That's going to be a 14.4-foot tide, followed by a low tide at 8:32 p.m. of 2.2 feet. And your minus tide tomorrow is at 9 a.m. exactly, minus 1.2 feet. 61 degrees here in Kodiak. It's gotten a little warmer over the last few minutes. We're looking for cloudier skies as the day wears on and overnight, but tomorrow it's expected to gradually become mostly sunny with a high near 66. Scattered showers on Wednesday, becoming mostly sunny again on Thursday. So these kind of conditions expected to continue. Mariners, be aware we do have gale warnings on both sides of the island. Here is your synopsis for the North Gulf Coast, including Kodiak Island waters and Cook Inlet. A front will remain across the Gulf before dissipating on Tuesday evening. Marmon Island to Sitkanat, Kodiak offshore waters on the east side. You have southwest winds to 40 knots right now, diminishing to 30 knots this afternoon. 20-foot seas are expected to come down to 15 feet tonight, but remain at 14 feet tomorrow with west winds to 30 knots. Chiniac and Marmot Bays, we're looking to southwest winds to 20 knots and seas 4 to 5 feet. For tomorrow, southwest 15, seas to 3 feet. In the Shelikof, we have a gale warning today with southwest winds to 40 knots right now. Should diminish 30 knots this afternoon. Seas of 17 feet are expected to subside to 13 feet this afternoon and be at 11 feet tonight, down to 7 feet tomorrow. The University of Alaska Board of Regents is accepting public testimony today. It's happening between 4 and 6 p.m. Alaskans can offer feedback to the UA Board of Regents on topics of concern or provide input on any issue facing the University of Alaska. Public testimony provides for direct public input in advance of the board's committee meeting starting September 3rd and the full board meeting starting September 10th. Alaskans can provide written testimony anytime by emailing eua-bor@alaska.edu. And the number to call when you're in queue for testimony is 866-831-8713. For information and to participate, you need to go to the University of Alaska Board of Regents website. August 31st is the final day, that's today, of the Summer Reading Challenge. Be sure to log in your reading today and stop by with any tickets to win gift prizes. Winners will be drawn on September 4th. Join the fun while enjoying social distancing with the next Zoom Room Trivia game on Thursday. That's happening at 6 p.m. Call Lori at 486-8688 for an invitation, and all are welcome.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT two times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m. and during the midday report at 12:20. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486 3181. Fax us at 486-2733 or email psa@kmxt.org.